The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel from both Matthew and Luke. I'm going to read two parts of two different Gospels. The first one, Matthew's, is to see this day from Joseph's side, and the second, from Luke's Gospel, is to see it from Mary's side. And Matthew says, this is how the birth of Jesus came about. When his mother Mary was betrothed to Joseph, but before they lived together, she was found with child through the Holy Spirit. Joseph, her husband, since he was a just man, but unwilling to expose her to the law, decided to divorce her quietly. And such was his intention when, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary, your wife, into your home. For it is through the Holy Spirit that this child has been conceived. She will bear a son, and you are to name him Jesus, because he will save his people from their sin. So before we move to the other, note that the main thing said about Joseph is he is willing to disobey the law. At that point, he assumes Mary has had sex with somebody else. What else could he assume? And yet he doesn't become an angry or hateful man, but in fact protects her from shame and the law, operates outside the law to protect this woman that he knows is good. Now the angel then speaks to him afterwards and explains the whole situation. That's the way it usually works. You only get the affirmation from the Lord after your leap of faith, after your act of trust. Now with that, let's move to Luke's gospel, the one you're perhaps more familiar with, as he reads the situation from Mary's side. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that the whole world should be enrolled. This was the first census when Quirinus was governor of Syria, that world that we hear about so much even today, that is suffering still. So all went to be enrolled, each to his own town. And Joseph went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David that is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and the family of David, to be enrolled with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. And while they were there, the time came for him to have her birth. And she gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. This is the gospel of the Lord. Brothers and sisters, in so many ways, although we all love this great feast, this day around which it seems the whole year evolves or revolves, it's a shame in some ways that we've made it something merely sentimental and pretty. Because as we see in these original gospel texts, there's really nothing pretty about it. We're dealing with hard facts here, that somehow the divine has entered the material world. Now, the only way human beings can understand spiritual things is they have to be presented in physical, material form. We can't get it otherwise. We have to see it. We have to touch it. And the way God would come into the world would seem to be very important, to say where God is to be found and where we should look for God. Because the great question has always been, where is God? Who is God? And where is this God hiding? Because originally, initially, in our lives, God isn't real obvious to most people. Now, what the mystery we celebrate today is saying is that the divine has chosen its hiding place in the world. and it's in all material things. But that all becomes summed up now in the body of Jesus. And we're going to see in these accounts, I'm only reading a short portion of each, that, again, as I say, there's nothing really pretty about it. It's sort of the hard facts of reality. It's a substantial truth, not a merely sentimental truth. So we have Joseph, as I mentioned, breaking the law, knowing what he should do to an adulterous woman, but he doesn't. He doesn't know that she has conceived by the Holy Spirit. So it's sort of meant to make you wonder, what does this mean? But certainly it's amazing that so much of religion became so legalistic when we have at the very beginning a man breaking the law to protect the dignity and the shame of a woman. Beautiful. Then, the story from Mary's side that we read in Luke, of course we don't see the whole picture here, but we clearly have a couple that is homeless, and as we'll see in the readings in the next few weeks, a couple that is very soon to be refugees or immigrants. So where is this God finding himself? Where is this God revealing himself? Not in the safe world, but at the edge, at the bottom, among those where we don't want to find God, where we don't look for God, where we don't expect God. The way we've created Christianity, you would think it was all about being nice and pretty and middle class and normal and under the law. And here we have in the gospel stories, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph being none of those things. It might just be telling us we should be looking elsewhere. Maybe the reason that people's God knowledge seems so limited is because they've been looking at the normal, at the ordinary, at what we consider nice and pretty for God. And here we have God revealing himself at the edge, at the bottom, among the poor. You know, the other incarnation stories of other religions in the world have the divine entering the world by appearing on a lily pad or in a lotus flower or a meteorite coming from the heavens. And those are actually pretty believable stories. If I was going to create a story, I'd probably write it that way. But what is our story? God being totally vulnerable, totally poor, totally helpless, a little child. This is almost not a fitting image for God. It's telling us right away, God is not who you think God is. A few weeks ago, I was preaching in New York, and the friend I was with, we were walking by Macy's on 34th Street. I said, let's go see the famous Santa Claus of Macy's. And I went in and I said, where's Santa Claus? And they said, oh, he's up on the 8th floor. Of course, they want you to walk through all the floors and buy things all the way up and all the way down. But I wanted to see the Macy's Santa Claus. So we went all 8 floors to the top. And I don't know if you've ever seen Santa Claus in New York. You actually got to climb up a whole bunch of stairs, and he's sitting on a throne, making a list, checking it twice, going to find out who's naughty or nice. I want to tell you, brothers and sisters, most people's image of God is Santa Claus. It's not this poor, powerless, humble, vulnerable baby who has come to love us in places and ways that we're not ready to be loved. We've never been ready for God. But what this feast is telling us is that reality at its foundation is good. The divine is hidden in the human. The holy is hidden in the physical and the material. And therefore, you have every reason to live in hope and trust and confidence. Brothers and sisters, we don't live that way. We're producing the highest amount of mentally ill, depressed, and addictive people, perhaps of any society that has ever lived. People do not feel safe in this world. But I have to say, sometimes it's because we've given them a God who is more a tyrant, more a Santa Claus, than a vulnerable lover hidden in our very bodies. Let me end with a poem by a lesser-known poet, although he was a poet laureate of the United States back in the 1950s. W.S. Merwin is his name. And I read this because I think this could be, should be, the response of a Christian if he or she is reading reality correctly. If you're listening to the world in truth because of what happened on this day, listen. The night is falling, and we are still saying thank you. We are stopping on the bridges to bow from the railings. We are running out of the glass rooms with our mouths full of food to once more look at the sky and say, thank you. How many of you saw the full moon this morning? How beautiful on Christmas morning. We are standing by the water, thanking it. We are smiling by the windows, looking out in all directions. We are back from the hospitals, back from the muggings. We are after the funerals, and we are still saying, thank you. After the news of the dead, whether or not we knew them, we are still saying, thank you. Over telephones, we are saying, thank you. In doorways and in the backs of cars and in elevators, remembering wars and the police at the door and the beatings on stairs, we are still saying thank you. In the banks, we are saying thank you. In the faces of the officials and the rich and of all who will never change, we go on saying thank you, thank you. With the animals dying all around us, our lost feelings, we are saying thank you. With the forests falling faster than the minutes of our lives, we are saying thank you. With the words going out like cells of a brain, with the cities growing over us, we are saying thank you, faster and faster. With nobody listening and nobody caring, we are still saying thank you. We are saying thank you, and we are waving at the world, dark though it is.